Hello, Guitar Smarts fans. Before you check out this podcast, I want to make you aware of a cool new place where you can interact with other Guitar Smarts listeners. It's a Facebook group called the Guitar Geek Hangout. That's where we hang out and talk about all things guitar. So if you like the Guitar Smarts podcast, come and chat with Kieran and myself over in the Guitar Geek Hangout on Facebook. Maybe check out some pre-podcast clips and even get involved in asking and answering lots of questions from the other page dwellers. Hope to see you there.
There he is.
Hey, it's so good to see you, mate. Are you well?
I'm very well. It's been too long, eh?
Been too long, eh? You go to Canada, did you? Or...
Hey?
How are you keeping, buddy? You well?
I am really well. I'm really well, thank you, mate. Yeah, I've been stepping away from the desk and country for a few weeks. Had a lovely family holiday in Thailand, which was just exceptional. I love Thailand. I just really do. What an incredible place. I do, mate. You know me well. I do love the Far East. I love the culture. I love the climate. I love the food. I love the just everything about it. But
the guitars, the Japanese guitars.
I love the guitars. Oh, man. So many guitars I've seen on Reverb. And I'm like, oh, that's lovely. Where's that? Oh, that's in Indonesia. I'm like, oh, well, yeah. I can't just hop over there and go and pick it up. But and a bit of traveling with work. So, yeah, it's been a bit crazy, but some well-needed rest in there, mate. But I'm so happy to be speaking to you. It's just been too long.
I can't even remember when it was, mate. But do you know what? It feels like it was yesterday.
Oh,
it always does.
Hey, well, look, it was yesterday that I listened to the podcast episode you recorded with Damo. While I was on holiday. That was
he very
good.
Kindly stepped in to do a show, and he was he spoke so passionately about, you know, ear training and training your ear to actually, do you know what I think? I came out of that thinking, I guess it's kind of just putting knowledge to something you already know, in a way, because I think probably most guitarists develop their ear really well over the time. You probably don't always kind of know how to understand what it is you've then kind of picked up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you recognize the sound of certain things and stuff like that. And sometimes it's just a case of putting the knowledge to the... You know what I mean. I don't know how to describe it.
I do know what you mean, but when I was listening to it, I took some tips out of it myself, right? Yeah. Because just the way that you guys were talking about the major scale and the intervals, and just really trying to be able to commit to memory, like the intervals between those different notes, and being able to hear those bits, right? Because obviously we can all, you know, regurgitate the major scale, the whole do re mi piece, and we'll get it right, but it's when you're not doing it in that linear order and you want to go from the root to the fourth, to the fifth, and be able to really, you know, have that tuned in by ear. I was just like, oh yeah, that's some useful exercises that I could do. So I loved listening to it. I loved the notion of Damien somehow being in my house and rummaging through my drawers, which that was great. I was laughing listening to that.
He was sat right where you were there the whole time.
In my house.
In his underpants, and he just, you know, he spoke very, you know, lovingly the whole time about
indeed,
your house.
In an excited way, exactly. While sitting in my chair. When I was a younger man and single and living on my own in my little bachelor pad, Damien and another good friend of mine who used to come round, I'm much better now than I was back then, but I had a lot of kind of OCD, like in terms of how I wanted everything laid out and in its place. And two of my friends who know and love me well would relish in coming round to my house and moving stuff, but not telling me, so that it would mess with my head like days or weeks later when I would eventually find what they'd done in and around my house when they were coming to visit. And this went on for months and years. It's like a game they would play. So when you guys were talking on the podcast about Damien being in my house and rummaging through my drawers and moving stuff, that brought back a lot of memories of how he would tease me doing that. So yeah, it's and I love him doing it. It's great.
Oh,
it's great.
That's amazing.
But no, it's a good podcast, and it made me think. It made me think about ear training, and then what people are doing if they're not training their ear, in terms of what are they downloading and looking at, and songs, and are they songs and things that they should just be using their ear to do. So that sent me down a whole kind of rabbit hole of research, and I found some stuff that I was going to share with you today, which I thought would be quite amusing.
I remember when I was at ACM and we were doing ear training, and one of the first lessons, the teacher Eric Roach, who was an incredible acoustic guitarist, he sadly passed away around the end of our course because he had cancer. But he was like Tommy Emmanuel level acoustic guitarist, incredible.
Oh wow!
Recommend anyone goes and checks him out. Eric Roach, his name was.
Okay.
But he did the ear training module with us, and he used to always kind of like, he had a great way of teaching. So like, if we were, he was saying like, right, you need to understand how a perfect fifth interval sounds. He'd give you kind of songs or things, and that one always sticks with me because he said that's the Top Gun theme tune. You know, the first two notes in the Top Gun is a perfect fifth. You know, do 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 do. So you go do do. So if you hear that, you go, you know, perfect fifth. I always end up singing Top Gun.
Yeah.
Did I say Top Gear? I meant Top Gun.
I know you meant Top Gun.
I know.
One of my favourite of all time.
Yeah, and then there's things like Happy Birthday is kind of a major second, and then up to the fourth, the perfect fourth, although it's really starting on the fifth. Uh-huh. But in terms of intervals, it's one way of... So you had all these things in your head, you know, how do I recognise these different intervals? And he'd say, well, these songs and these famous melodies, this part of it here, you can use as a reference because you can sing that. Everyone can sing Happy Birthday, everyone can sing Top Gun.
Yeah.
And that's an easy way to kind of start getting those intervals into your head is, you know, kind of having these reference tunes, you know, that, you know, are those intervals. But yeah,
I love that. That's a great, that's a, we need to build a list of those so that people can, like, a whole list of songs that show you that interval. That's really cool. I love that.
Man. I'm glad you enjoyed that episode.
I did. I
did too. I came away feeling a bit kind of like motivated, you know, to kind of carry on with the ear training thing, because there's loads of, like, I'm terrible at descending intervals, you know what I mean, like the Top Gun one, perfect fifth, it's ascending, it's going from the thing, but down a fifth. If you go down a fifth, you're going to the fourth rather than the fifth, because you're kind of skipping back the fifth. So it's still technically the same interval, but it can feel confusing because you're hitting the note that would be the fourth if you ascended.
Got you.
So I find descending intervals harder to recognize than ascending intervals.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And then there's the fact that you kind of, if you're working within a key, I find it easier to recognize the intervals if I'm always going from the root. But if you know that it's not the root in the key you're in, then it can become a bit more confusing to go, you know, like I could tell you that I'm going from the third to the major seventh, but I would struggle to tell you what that interval is in terms of its, you know, its musical reach, if you know what I mean. Like the first to the fifth is a perfect fifth. So the second to the sixth is also a perfect fifth because it's the same distance. So I guess it would be a perfect fifth. But anyway, it's complex. It can become complex, but it's still so important to learn because, you know, gives you, you know, more kind of capability in a way, doesn't it? So
it does. And listening to you guys chat, these conversations normally freak me out, like, because I'll be with somebody like you chatting about this, or with Damien, or with any one of our friends who's really kind of well educated in music theory. And my you know, guitar playing has relied on a smattering of theory and a lot of ear training and kind of just, you know, fingerboard memory and gut feel, right? So I can only go so far in those conversations, up to a point where I then start to feel anxiety because I'm like, oh, I kind of had it and I was there and I felt I knew what we were talking about, and then it just slips away from me and I need to go back and read up again and all of that. that. But what I loved about the conversation that you guys had, which has stuck with me since I heard it a few days back, is this whole bit around hard work and practice, and that, yes, it does unlock this kind of monster player further down the line. But moreover than that, it's kind of something that you need to recognize is a process and a journey. And even these incredible people that you talked about in terms of Vi and Satriani, and I love the kind of parallels that were drawn with Arnold Schwarzenegger and his career, you know, don't take for granted how hard somebody has had to work, and don't almost kind of neglect that you do have to put that work in, and then good things will come. And it's just a really nice conversation to listen to as an outsider, to be reminded of, don't get anxious, don't get freaked out by this stuff. Every time you'll learn a little bit more, and that's part of the process of learning and putting in the work and practicing it. And so I really enjoyed it from that perspective as well, because it's easy to get bewildered by all of this, but realize that everybody started at some point in that journey and accelerated in their own rate through that journey. At some point, Steve Vai, probably when he was sent away by Joe Satriani and told to go and find that B note on, you know, on whatever string, went home and just kind of went, I don't know this stuff. I still don't know it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, what Steve Vai answer should have been when he was told to find F sharp on the B
string
was, which one, Joe? Because there's two, right?
Exactly. Yeah,
so if he'd have learnt it properly, he should have answered it with a question.
Correct. True. Exactly. Right. That would have been it. Then you've passed the test.
I think the biggest point Demo made, which I think for me has always been the problem in a lot of guitarists' minds when it comes to not just learning theory, but understanding the theory behind what you already know, is that it's not a barrier to creativity. It's not like the more you learn and try and understand, the less creative or, you know, inspiration you find. You know, it's not like everything you're meant to create has got to be stumbled upon.
Yeah.
You know, it's about, you know, you listen to Steve Vai's music and people like Tom Quayle, Martin Miller, and all these people who, you know, have done that work. Does it sound to you like they're any less creative than...
No, of course not. Of course not.
Yeah.
I think it's, I genuinely use this as a belief fundamental when I was younger.
Yeah.
And part of it, I think, was born out of a fact that I couldn't really come to grips with some of the theory anyway, so found it difficult. So then it becomes a very nice excuse to fall back on to say it stifles creativity and I don't want to be formulaic in my playing, and doing this will ultimately lead to that. So, and I think that was, obviously, in hindsight, you know, ego and fear getting in the way of common sense. And also, it's one of those things as well, right, where you know there are plenty of people that probably don't appear to have the encyclopedic musical theory knowledge that you think should come from being a professional virtuoso or world-renowned guitarist, right?
Yeah.
You know, and you mentioned it in the podcast, right? You talked about Clapton and, you know, my heroes like Slash and, you know, at the time all the Britpop bands that were coming out, and, you know, the Beatles going all the way back. And you know, history and generations are littered with guitarists and rock stars, if I can use that terminology, that seem to embody almost an anti-academic, anti-kind of educational mindset. And all you see is the visceral rock star, right? And you go, well, that's the secret. If anything, the route to musical genius is take loads of drugs, stay up late, and practice a lot, for sure, but just practice from whatever you feel you want to play. And that's creativity. And I think that's quite misguided. And I think you explained it really nicely. Like, okay, Eric Clapton might not be the biggest proponent of music theory on the guitar, or the person that people think of, but do not underestimate how much that man has studied and steeped himself in the history of the blues and learning technique from some of the blues greats that has then enabled him to become the guitarist that he is. You know, Slash has really good knowledge of music theory. You know, he's great friends with like the likes of Steve Lukather and stuff like that. And when you hear them kind of talk, clearly Steve Lukather is a million miles away in terms of music theory and knowledge, but they have a common language because they understand a lot of what they're doing on the guitar, right, at a theoretical level. So I think Yeah, I mean, that's a long ramble and a long way of essentially agreeing entirely with you, mate, and saying, you know, it is not the limiter on creativity. If anything, it is the bit that unlocks creativity. You've just got to battle through it.
Yeah.
What I like the most
about this first 10 minutes of this conversation is that we've managed to get Steve Lukather / and Clapton in the conversation quicker than I think we've ever managed to do. I mean, we might not be able to do that without just simply starting by saying their names next time we talk. Just you know, hey, Kieran, Steve Lukather / Clapton, let's get on with it.
I did wonder if the entire episode between you and Davo was going to be a Toto-based Lukather thing, because it did start like that, and of course, I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Sorry to interrupt this conversation. However, if you're a regular listener, then do us a favour. Share us with your friends. Spread the word. Help us to grow. And remember to hit that subscribe button wherever you listen to your podcasts. Let's get back to the show. Anyway, dude, listen, we've got some unfinished business that we've been waiting to talk about for a long time. Way back, like a couple of months back now, whenever it was, when we talked about the Gibson Garage and your visit there, and you then kind of just said, oh, there's a part two to this, but we'll speak about that later. And we've not spoken about it yet, and I'm dying to find out what the next part of this guitar safari is. So come on, man.
Okay, mate. All right. So I'll tell you what happened next. I'll try and keep it brief. So Gibson Garage, that's where we left off on that cliffhanger. I had a great couple of hours there. And as I said in that episode, the staff there was so gracious. Amazing customer service, and I really cannot wait to go back to the Gibson Garage. I thought it was amazing. Of course, there were some things that I thought, you know, could be different about it, but just a cool place. But a brave move, setting up the Gibson Garage. Brave move? No, maybe a genius move. Setting up literally a 10-minute stroll from one of the most famous guitar streets in the world, which is Tin Pan Alley, or Denmark Street, as it's officially known in London, right? So you come out of Tottenham Court tube station and you'll be able to walk to Gibson Garage and then subsequently onto Denmark Street, you know, all within 15 minutes, right? So that's what I did. After Gibson Garage, I went, how close am I to Denmark Street? Yeah. Really close. All right.
Just the other end of Oxford Street, right? So you're just walking down Oxford Street, hang a right down at Shaftesbury Avenue, left onto Denmark Street, right? Easy peasy. There you go.
Easy peasy. Literally that, my friend. Cross the road and there you are. And what I would say is I was so, so delighted, right? Because I have a long history with Denmark Street. It's where my dad took me when I was 15 years old.
Yeah.
And I had worked tirelessly for a couple of years to achieve the grades that my parents wanted me to get in my academic studies. And I was earning money doing paper rounds and working in kind of like the local convenience store to earn some money, et cetera. And I was desperate to save up for an electric guitar, right? To this point, I'd been learning Metallica's Black Album on a classical guitar and reached the point where I needed an electric. So I'd been trying to save for that. And my parents kind of as a carrot dangled in front of me, look, if you get good grades in these exams coming up, you know, we'll help you out and we'll get you that guitar that you want. And all I wanted was an Epiphone Les Paul, right? And a Marshall. I needed the full works, right? I didn't have anything. So I needed a guitar. I needed an amp. I needed some pedals. I needed all of that, right? And that was the thing. I was just visualizing it. Anyway, exam results day came and I got the results I needed. And my parents were like,
amazing.
You've done it. Well done, son. You're off to Denmark Street this weekend with your dad. Go up there. And this was at the point where you could drive into London. My God. So we drove into central London, found some parking, and we went to Denmark Street. And back then, in what would have been the early 90s, it was just incredible. Buzzing, loads of guitar stores, just wow, just incredible. Yeah. Like I'd never seen anything like it. Denmark Street, I think, in recent years went through a bit of a battering, right? So the guitar stores started to kind of fall out of favor, started to fall out of a bit of kind of like looking like the stores that they once were. A lot of stores left and packed up. A lot of kind of refurbishment and buildings works were going on around Denmark Street. And I remember going to it a couple of times in the last kind of 10 years, I would say, and being really disheartened at what it had become, just thinking, wow, this street is just lost. I think
that's partly because of e-commerce and as well around the cost of, like you say, the cost of getting into London.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if I were to go into London now from Farnborough, you know, even an off-peak travel card is like £40, you know,
which
only a 35-minute train ride. We're not talking like cross-country or anything. I could get a plane ticket to Manchester for around the same price. You know?
I know. It's obscene, the rail fares in this country. It's 60 quid from where I am, right? So that's another 10, 15 minutes down the road from where you are. So it jumps up by another 20, 30 bucks. Let's not go into the whole broken Britain kind of cost of living thing. But I think e-commerce certainly affected a number of guitar stores through the late 90s and early 2000s, right? And and I think Denmark Street was not unaffected by that. But what I would say, when I went back there this year, all the building works and major kind of refurbishments in and around Denmark Street looked to have been finished. It looked like all the pedestrian areas had all been kind of redone. The place looks smart. Yes, there's a consolidation of what's happened in terms of the number of guitar stores there, but there's still loads. And everything just looked like it had a fresh kind of breath of life to it. And I was like, Denmark Street looks great again. This is cool. I'm going to really enjoy this. You know, having just come from the newly unveiled Gibson garage, I was expecting to go to Denmark Street and just go, oh, you poor thing, what have you become? Not at all. It's back and it looked great. And there's some brilliant guitar stores there, some that have always been there and some new kind of stores there. So yes, mate, we need to find a day where we can go and do both of those because that would just be a great day out. So anyway, I didn't have much time to go into every single guitar store there. So I made a beeline for Rose Morris. Now, Rose Morris is where I ended up buying my first Epiphone Les Paul, Marshall Valve State 8040, Crybaby Wah pedal,
nice,
leads and strap and all of that back in the day. Right now, again, a testament in terms of change of time. Back in the 90s, Rose Morris had this huge flagship store on the corner of Denmark Street, just as you entered onto that street. And it was huge.
Right.
Like multi-layered, like gigantic guitar store. That now, sadly, is a TK Maxx. So, you know the size of TK Maxx stores. They're big, right? So that used to be a guitar store. So that's the only thing that's kind of encroaching on Denmark Street, is that first shop on the corner is now a TK Maxx. All the rest of it is guitar shops and music shops still, which is cool. But Rose Morris basically bought the property or kept the property next door to that former huge store that they used to have. And it's still a lovely guitar store, still a really good size, lovely guitar store. So I thought, I'm going to go in there for old time's sake. And because I know they are a regular importer and retailer of Tokai guitars in the UK. So they, when I'm on their website, they always have Japanese ones, Chinese made ones, and the kind of Les Paul ones, the S type ones, all of them. So I was like, I've got some time, I'm going there. And because I could then AB versus the Gibsons that I just tried at the Gibson garage versus some of the Japanese Tokais and everything else that they had. Walked into the store, the guys were super friendly as always, asked me if I needed any help, and I said, actually, yeah, I wanted to try out some Japanese Tokais. So absolutely no problem, plugged me in. Not the headphone experience that I'd experienced at the Gibson garage where you had to plug into a set of kind of headphones. They were like, here's an amp, here's the lead, let's plug you in, turn it up, play, have some fun. So it was great. And, you know, the customer service was just exceptional, as you know, as you'd expect. So that was brilliant. What it confirmed for me was that the Tokai Japanese made Les Pauls are phenomenal.
Really?
Absolutely. Oh, man. And the price that they're charging, like under £2,000, like £1,500, you can get one for. The quality of the finish, the tones from them, the look of them, the feel, they are just absolutely phenomenal guitars. Honestly, I love my Gibson guitars and I will buy another Gibson at some point and they are great. But the next Les Paul type guitar I buy will for sure be a Japanese made Tokai.
Really?
Because they're just amazing. They are incredible. They give me that entire look, feel, vibe, everything. You know, I hate to say it, but Tokai have copied the Gibson Les Paul to the point where, in many instances, and versus the standard line of Gibson, they're doing it better.
Really?
They're just better. Yeah. It's not like you're buying a copy. You're buying an incredible thing. I mean, so long as you don't mind that very little bit of writing on the headstock doesn't say Gibson, it says Tokai, which for many people will be an absolute deal breaker. It's near enough the same. And yeah, we can have a whole debate about nitrocellulose and polyurethane and all of that. But, you know, the guitar sounded amazing. But that wasn't the guitar that I've been dreaming about since
I left.
The other guy, the guy in the store said to me, look, hey, do you want to try some of the strap type Tokais? And I was like, yeah, let me try some of those as well. So I tried some of those. They were very nice, very good, as you'd expect again.
Yeah.
And then he said to me, do you want to try the most strattiest strat you've ever tried in your entire life? And this is the benefit of going to like an independent or non-brand guitar store. Right? They've got everything there. Then he pulled down a PRS Silver. No, he didn't. It wasn't a PRS Silver Sky. It was the best Strat, inverted commas, Strat. I can't call it a Strat, can I? I have to call it an S type. S-style guitar that I've ever tried in my entire life. And he knew it was going to be the best Strat that I'd ever tried in my entire life before he even gave it to me, because his words were, do you want to try this strattiest Strat you've ever tried in your Stratty life? And I was like, okay. So he pulled down off the shelf for me a brand you will have heard of, mate, but I've never really tried them. And it's a brand called Maybach, which I don't know if you know about or not.
I think I've heard of them. I don't know anything about them.
Right.
But anyway, sorry, carry on.
I didn't either, right? So Maybach is a German-owned company, right, as far as I understand it. But they also have like a dedicated, their custom shop is a dedicated small shop of, I think, about half a dozen luthiers based out of the Czech Republic who effectively do their inverted commas custom shop work. But it's not custom shop. It's just their standard line of guitars that are hand built, hand finished in this luthier house in the Czech Republic, then shipped back to Germany to be kind of set up, finished, packaged before shipping out. So the guitar in question is called the Maybach Stradivari S61. Let me see if I can put something in the chat for you, or have a look and see if you can. Hold on,
Stradivari. So I'm just having a look on maybach-guitars.de.
Yes, Germany, obviously DE, yeah. And it's the Maybach Stradivari S61. And when you see it, you will go, well, it just looks like a Strat, Kieran. And you would be right to say that, because it's an exact copy of a Strat, right? It's just a Strat. Right, here, let me put it in the chat for you. There's a link there as well to somewhere else that's retailing one, which I've got my eye on. Seen it?
Just clicking the link. Just I'm kind of excited. That's the one.
Isn't the exact one. That is just a one.
Beautiful.
Right, so these guitars, the specs, it's a Strat. It looks like a Strat. It feels like a Strat. But the way this thing is built, Matt, is beautiful. And I don't even like aged or relic guitars, but the aging on this is so authentic and sympathetic. It's not just been dragged over some gravel and whipped with some bicycle chains. It's like aged in a kind of, it's been played really nicely kind of way. Mm. Right. So immediately you pick it up and it feels, oh, this feels nice.
Okay.
But I literally plugged it into the front of a little tweed amp, barely any reverb, no pedals, nothing, and played it. And it was like the Strat tone I've been looking for all my life, and sounded like a Strat going through a Dumble amp with like a tube screamer on, and not overdrip, but just that whole kind of,
it's like three-dimensional almost, right?
It was the strattiest Strat sound I have ever heard, just in itself.
So how many times did you play Slow Dancing in the Burning Room?
I went to play it. I did that. Well, he was saying to me, this guitar literally will do everything. Do your Stevie Ray stuff. So I did my Stevie Ray stuff. He was like, do some Claptony stuff. I was like, oh yeah, it does that as well, all of it. And then I just literally put it on position four and did the first like 5 seconds. And he went, no, don't do it. Don't do it.
No.
Only time in my life I've ever been in a guitar store and they've actually said, don't do it. Really? You're not allowed to play it. Yeah, we were in tears. I was in tears, like just wetting myself laughing. It's the only time in my existence that I've actually been in a store and they've said, don't do it. But it will do that as well. And I was like, totally will.
That's why you have to go to guitar stores to buy your guitars. That for is sure. why. That is
for
it.
Sure. They'd had enough of that one. They'd had enough of that song. So have a look at those guitars, guys. If you're in the market for a Strat, yeah. I promise you, and I've tried a lot of Strats in my life. I've set up a lot of Strats in my life. I've tried everything from custom shops down to Squires and everything in between. I've tried all of the other guitar makers that make Strats apart from Shure. I do need to try one of their Strats, but this was phenomenal. And for the price point, I mean, you would have to put it up in terms of quality against something costing three times as much from the Fender Custom Shop. And I think it comes back to the pickups. So this is the other thing that's you're gonna think on, right? The pickup, obviously the guitar itself is made beautifully. The components of it are brilliant. It's been finished wonderfully. So if you've got a spare 2,000 quid, you can get them secondhand for around 1,500. But if you're in the market for that, just go and try one of these. They're incredible. However, I think it comes down to the pickups. So I traced what the pickups are in this guitar, and they're made by a German manufacturer called Amber.
Right, okay.
Okay, so Amber are, I think, one of the exclusive suppliers, if not the exclusive supplier to Maybach guitars of their pickups, right?
Okay.
But they are a pickup manufacturer in their own right. So Maybach guitars do a whole range of different instruments, not just these Strat style guitars. They do their own version of Les Pauls and stuff like that. And all of them have, I think I'm correct in saying, these Amber pickups. But anyway, this Stradivari one that I fell in love with definitely has these Amber pickups in it. They are hand wound, beautiful, bespoke pickups. The ones that are in this model of guitar are they're called the Amber 61. So they're basically their replica of a fat sounding early 60s, Fender pickup. It uses all of the kind of original spec kind of wiring. Mm. And they say it's got that clean fat sound also with that bell-like tone, right? Mm. And I'm pretty sure that era of pickups, right, is the ones that Bonamassa always talks about as the best-sounding pickups. John Mayer, or, you know, tried to create his PRS Silver Sky with a replica of those kind of 61 kind of style pickups. Stevie Ray Vaughan's pickups, I think, in his Strat were kind of 61 or 63, something like that. Anyway, it's Amber pickups as the manufacturer, and it's their pickup, which I think is probably the best single coil pickup that I've ever heard in my life. And they sell them for 100 quid each. So for 300 quid, for 300 quid for a set, I mean, it's a considered purchase for a set of pickups, but it's probably cheaper than a set of something from Seymour Duncan or whatever.
Yeah, your bare knuckles, your lollers, and things like that. If you're looking for something that's like seriously, you know, proper kind of artisan pickup, handmade, you're probably going to be looking at loller pickups. You're going to be looking at high-end antiquities from Seymour Duncan or, like, you know, the bare knuckles.
Absolutely.
That's cheaper than those guys, pretty certain.
I mean, that's from Europe. I don't know if they ship globally, but they certainly ship across the whole of Europe. I'm sure they were probably shipped internationally. But yeah, these were just the best single coil pickups I've ever heard. So yeah, check out Amber Pickups, German company, but just making the most incredible sounding pickups. And when put into that Maybach guitar, just created the best Strat tone that I've ever heard innately in a guitar.
Wow, amazing. They do a lot of pickups as well. They do like Charlie Christian style pickups as well. And amazing.
Cool, man. So there you go.
I'm going to be going down now.
Yeah, I thought you'd like that because if you don't want to spend $2,000 on a Strat and you've already got a Strat body sitting around there and you can find a set of these Amber pickups, just wow. Go. And subsequently, as I've done some research on these, you can find in the kind of online forums and things, people that have tried these pickups or been playing these Maybach guitars with these pickups in, a lot of people are like, yeah, these pickups are just the best that I've ever heard. And yeah, I can testify to that, having heard them. They're just brilliant.
Amazing.
Cool.
Dude, so there you go. So that was... Like it was a most valuable guitar safari all in one day as well. Crikey, how did you even have time to do any work in the afternoon? I mean...
And then I had meetings all afternoon.
No, what's going
on? Right. I know. It was a good day. It was a good fun day. It was a good day to go, yeah, I went to work and got paid today, but yeah.
That's it. Yeah, but I took a few moments to go on a, you know, guitar safari. Amazing.
Yeah.
That's so good, dude.
It's a great day. It's a great
day. Let's move on to the last thing of today, which is this fascinating article you sent me about the research that has been done by somebody called Eloy Cordette for a website called woodandfirestudio.com, which is, it looks to be a website about music production and gear theory and things like that. And they've gone and done quite an incredible task of researching and investigating what the most searched and most played songs and guitar riffs are in countries all around the world.
Yeah, man.
I mean, it's pretty cool when you think about it. I mean, the article starts with this map of basically which songs and are kind of the most searched for. So not like a poll. It's not a poll where a select group of people have been asked about, you know, what songs do you want to learn and things like that. Or this is literally looking at the Google analytics of what people are searching for when they're searching for tabs and chords, right? So what they've done is they've now collated a list of over 271 songs, and it's come from over 2.3 million searches. It says, our analysis aims to show which songs are played most often in which countries and which songs are searched for most frequently worldwide in absolute numbers. So it's not a poll, not a reference. It's not kind of like, you know, this is the sample size. It's absolute numbers. And the top three songs for each country can be seen in the map above. And this is, I find the results utterly fascinating.
Me too. You know. Me too. Well, this was prompted by your conversation with Damo, right? On the whole ear training piece and that whole thing around, is this a dying art? You know, around ear training and people learning guitar in that way now, especially with the advent of, I think Damo was referring to, like, you know, AI and stuff like that, you know, even beyond YouTube. So it kind of prompted me to go, what are people searching for and looking at when they're looking at this? Because I know I use YouTube and stuff like that for online guitar lessons when I'm trying to learn a song in a hurry for a dep gig. And I will always try and learn it myself first because that's the quickest way to get it under your fingers. But if I'm under pressure or I want to sense check what I've done to see if there's an easier inversion somewhere or I'm just missing something in the way that I've kind of, you know, learned it, then I'll just cross check, right? So I do it. We all do it. And it just made me think, what are people looking for and what are the most downloaded? And, you know, lo and behold, these guys have literally just done the research for this. So I was like, oh, brilliant. I'll have a read of this. And I felt when I read it, well, you tell me what your, I don't know how much time you've had to have a look at it, but I certainly had some interesting kind of like, oh, moments when I looked at the list. I was like, all right.
I'll tell you what we'll do. Let's go on. I'm just going to give you the rundown. So we could talk for hours about the map. I mean, like one of the things that I find absolutely hilarious is that the most searched for song in Ethiopia is Song 2 by Blur. I don't know why I find that so funny. Let's look at the first list that they've kind of posted as a worldwide list is just the world's most played songs in absolute terms. So just the most searched for tabs and chord sheets. And it goes basically from number one to number 10, Hallelujah by Jeff Buckley, Perfect, Ed Sheeran, Wish You Were Here, Pink Floyd, Let It Be, The Beatles, Wonderwall, Oasis, Hotel California by the Eagles, Creep by Radiohead, House of the Rising Sun by the Animals, Can't Help Falling in Love by Elvis Presley, and Yellow by Coldplay. And my first thoughts were, crikey, there's not a lot of recent music in this.
Exactly.
Except for Ed Sheeran, Perfect, which is what, within the last 5 years?
Probably more now, mate.
Yeah, I think the next newest song is Yellow by Coldplay, which was 2000. That's 24 years ago. And I think oldest song on that list is probably Can't Help Falling in Love, Falling in Love by Elvis Presley, which was 61.
Yeah.
And it kind of goes, that's the first thing that struck me is crikey, it's you know, this, there's a lot of the most famous or most searched for songs have got a hell of a lot of longevity.
Exactly. And then the I looked at the list and I was like, am I in the 1990s or two? Like,
exactly. Yeah.
This is the same list, or apart from the Ed Sheeran one. This is the same list when I was growing up and learning guitar, which, it was interesting.
Exactly. So, and then the next thing that struck me was that out of this top 10, let me just check, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Out of the top 10, 7 of the artists are British artists. Which I kind of thought, well, that's good. Not that I'm not actually a particularly patriotic person. I don't know why. Just don't understand. I've never felt like, I mean, that's a different thing altogether. I don't really understand it in a way, you know. But anyway, I thought, well, that's interesting. But that's just the most played songs in absolute terms. And there's more lists that they've done, right, which are kind of... like the most played guitar riffs. But before doing that, I'm just going to jump on, because I know we've got a lot of listeners in the US and obviously the UK, that if I go to the map, it gives you the top three for that, for the country that you hover over. And for the United States of America, it's Hallelujah by Jeff Buckley. And obviously, it's not originally a Jeff Buckley song, is it? It's a Leonard Cohen song.
It's a Leonard Cohen,
And then the number two is Hotel California, rightly so as well. I mean,
it's a great song.
That song is amazing. The whole album is absolutely fantastic. And then number three is Creep by Radiohead. That surprised me. Not because I think it's a bad song.
That's a great song.
I'm surprised. I wonder why that's the case. But interesting. So, and then in the UK, so... obviously, we love the Beatles here. So number one is Let It Be by the Beatles. Number two, Hallelujah. Number three, Hotel California. So Hotel California getting a lot of love around the world. And then in Brazil, I love that Brazil number one is Wish You Were Here by Pink Floyd. Like, I wish I was there as well, to be honest. So this, I mean, I could spend hours looking at this list. It's so fascinating.
It's an insight. Yeah. It's an insight. And I don't know what conclusions I draw from it, right? Whether it's, because this is based on Google searches. So is this indicative of who uses Google and the age demographic and the types of people that use Google versus something like the newer generation that might just be going straight to YouTube and typing it into YouTube? I don't know. So maybe it's self-selecting in terms of the platform where this data has been taken from. Maybe not. But yeah, interesting. Interesting. I'd like to think is that these songs have stood the test of time.
Yeah.
It may just be that the world is filled with covers bands that all have the same set list. And we could go in depth anywhere in the world, mate.
That is a very good point. I mean,
I think it is.
Do you know what I think my favorite country is on this map? It might be Nigeria, right? Because
brilliant.
Number three on their list is Fragrance to Fire by Dunsin Oyekan, which I'm assuming is probably a local artist. Maybe.
A local artist.
Number two is then A Star Is Born from the movie Shallow. Shallow from the movie A Star Is Born.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes.
Lady Gaga, Bradley Cooper. But the number one search song in Nigeria of 109 searches per month, which is nearly 10 times as much as number two, is Spanish Fly by Van Halen. That is just incredible. I've just got this image of everyone in Nigeria picking up an acoustic guitar and going, I really want to be able to play Spanish. Have you heard Spanish Fly?
No.
Are you kidding? You've never heard Spanish Fly by Van Halen? I mean,
by Van Halen. Yes, of course. Yeah. But who's playing that in Nigeria?
I mean, it's amazing. That Nigeria must be full of shredders, right? That is amazing. I would never have guessed that was the case. And then pretty much the whole of South America, everyone just seems to want to play Can't Help Falling in Love by Elvis Presley, except for Brazil, that seems to be on a Pink Floyd thing. I find this whole thing so fascinating. Just absolutely incredible. So I really recommend anyone goes to woodandfirestudios.com and look at their article there. Sorry, woodandfirestudio.com and look at their article, Most Played Songs and Riffs. Let's go down to the riffs section, right? So
there's a riff section.
There is a riff section. So as well as the most searched for songs, there's the most searched for riffs. And this is 20 songs. And what stuck out to me on this... right, is it's actually this is a really, really good list. I mean, this is a good list of riffs, right? Mm-hmm. As you'd expect it to be. But yes, there's nothing really that sticks out to me on here as kind of like, you know, it shouldn't be there.
No.
It's really good. Although I would say Blackbird by the Beatles was...
Oh, is that on? Oh, yeah, number 16.
Yeah.
Number 16 on the list.
That's an interesting one. I mean, it is great. But number one...
Is it a riff? Don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Is it a riff?
I guess.
Don't anyway.
Debatable.
So, number one, Seven Nation Army by the White Stripes.
Yeah, I was like, really? Mm. Not because I don't love it. I love it. It's a great track. It's a great track. It's a great track, but it's really easy. Like, use your ears. Do some ear training. Exactly. you don't need to Google the tab for that.
Completely agree. Sorry.
It's a bit harsh, but that was my first thought. It's like, come on. If ever there was a song to just do some ear training to, it would be that.
I mean, it's all played on one string as well.
I know. Yeah. So I was slightly disheartened because I was hoping to think that people were going to Google to download complex stuff. But hey, there you go.
I tell you what I do love about this list as well is the most represented band in the list is Metallica, right? Which I think is testament to James Hetfield's riff writing ability. Not that I'm certain that every riff in this in a Metallica song in here, not that I know that they're all Hetfield riffs, right? Some of them might be Hammett riffs or whatever, but Master of Puppets is on there. One, Fade to Black, Enter Sandman, of course, Nothing Else Matters. Nothing Else Matters is an incredible song.
Absolutely.
Come As You Are by Nirvana, number three, which is actually, that is one of the greatest riffs of all time.
It's one of the first I learned on the guitar.
Yeah, I think probably for me as well. So easy. Yeah. Stairway to Heaven, number two, of course. Is that a riff?
Again, is it a riff? It's a collection of many riffs and amazing solos and everything else in between. It's a masterclass. It's a masterclass.
I think
right there.
I would say it's a riff. I'd say it's the kind of thing you play at a party when you want everyone to leave. That's, you know what I mean?
Or a guitar store, for that matter.
Or a guitar store. Yeah, exactly.
No John Mayer riffs on there.
There are no
Slow Dancing didn't make the cut.
Is that a riff? I guess it is.
Wow.
It is a riff, isn't it? But it doesn't really play anywhere else in the song. I don't know if... that's John...
That's true.
Because I think the best John Mayer riff is... what's the, you know, who did you think I was, you know, from the trailer?
Oh, that's a great track.
That is a killer riff.
That is a great riff. Yeah. I learned that one once. I'm going to have to relearn that this afternoon. That's a killer riff.
Yeah. In fact, that whole album from the early 2000s, John Mayer Trio Live, there's a lot of songs on that which I don't remember him ever performing anywhere else. That's full of really, really great songs. No John Mayer stuff on there. No Clapton
stuff.
Yeah, you'd think Layla would have been on there. Maybe everyone who likes Layla can learn that by ear, you know.
But they can't learn Seven Nation Army.
Nope. Sweet Home Alabama, number eight, by Lynyrd Skynyrd.
You know what? I think my theory is true. I think this entire list and Google searches is based on international cover bands and their set list and an inordinate amount of depth guitarists frantically Googling stuff to learn the night before a gig. That's all it is. That's exactly what this list is.
I think you could be right. Although, I mean, to be fair, if I saw a wedding band going out doing this set list, I would book them for sure.
Yeah, me too. That's awesome.
Grand congratulations, Matt and Lucy. We're going to kick off with Stairway to Heaven, Come As You Are, Nothing Else Matters.
That's true. Yeah, my theory's exactly. gone.
Small yeah, common water for gone. Me, I think, is probably... Yeah. That has to be the most, like, I mean, anyone can play that. I mean, you could give anyone a guitar, right? I'd say that's even easier to figure out than, what did we say? Seven Nation Army.
Yeah, arguably, yeah, it is, yeah.
Bit of Black Sabbath in there. I've never been a Black Sabbath fan, to be honest. Neither. I think some great riffs there, but I cannot stand the sound of Ozzy Osbourne singing.
No, same.
House of the Rising Sun on again, the Back in Black AC/DC. This is a great playlist, actually.
It is, isn't it?
It is.
It really is.
Yeah.
They all deserve to be on there. There's nothing in there that makes you go, oh, what a terrible song. Why are people learning that? Yeah, it's great. Yeah. They're all great.
Hang on, is this true? This is it. So the next part of the article says, this is where the famous forbidden riff joke on the guitar comes from. The first four songs are played so often that the staff in guitar departments of music stores can no longer hear them.
I think they're trying to explain the concept to non-guitarists of the forbidden riff joke, but I don't think, I don't know, we should go and email Guitar Village or Andertons and go, what is the forbidden riff of 2023?
Yeah, yeah.
Or 2024. We're well enough into 2024 to know what it is, but yeah.
Well,
maybe it is those.
Maybe it is.
Seven Nations, Stairway, still. Stairway's always been, right? Wasn't that in Wayne's World as a forbidden riff in Wayne's World?
That's right. Yeah. No Stairway, man.
No Stairway, yeah.
No Stairway. Denied.
Denied.
Man, I could like watch that movie and I could talk along with every line. No, but some of the funniest jokes ever are in that. Like the guy comes on the show trying with his invention, which is the cut and suck, which is like this hair cutting machine that sucks your hair up as it's trying to cut. And Garth's like, is it cutting?
God, telling it down.
Like, it's sucking my will to live, man. And then Wayne says, well, it certainly does suck. Such a good movie. One of the best parody kind of 80s rocker movies of all time, Wayne's World. What an absolute legendary. Speaking of the USA, so just kind of wrapping up the article, the most played songs in the USA, obviously Hallelujah, Hotel California, Creep, then it's Wonderwall, Wagon Wheel by Darius Rucker, which I think is the only country song on the list, if you don't really count Hotel California, which is more Americana. And Can't Help Falling in Love, I guess, you could say it's a bit country. But Wagon Wheel by Darius Rucker. You know who Darius Rucker is?
Nope.
So Darius Rucker used to be the lead singer in Hootie and the Blowfish. Do you remember Hootie and the Blowfish?
Oh, I loved Hootie and the Blowfish. Exactly.
They were the biggest band in the world for a short time.
Yeah. Like
early 90s. And Wagon Wheel, Darius Rucker, that is a great country song, actually. I do know that one well.
Okay, cool. Can listen to that.
Most played songs in the UK is not too dissimilar. Let It Be, Hallelujah, Hotel California, House of the Rising Sun, Wish You Were Here, Creep, Yellow, Wonderwall, Hey Jude, and Zombie by the Cranberries.
The Cranberries. Wow.
Yeah.
There's a flashback.
Yeah, and then Germany, it's just a long list of David Hasselhoff, I think. It isn't really, but it's a fascinating article. I mean, you know, it's so different around the world. But yeah, I'll put a link to this in the description.
Yeah, it's worth reading. I mean, what I would say is that it probably is an article that's slightly biased in terms of the journalism towards English language songs, right? If you do drill down into some of the details for some of those countries, you will find, you know, in places like the Philippines and Russia and places like that, the most downloaded song by far is a local language song by a local band who, it's unfortunate, aren't given the same representation and airtime that they deserve. For example, I think probably the most downloaded song in the entire world via Google, or at least via search results, is by a Filipino band called the Eraserheads, and it's their song Ang Huling El Bimbo, which didn't get a name check in this article and should have done, because its index numbers are off the chart. And I went onto YouTube and had listened to it, and they are the Philippines answer to Oasis. So I listened to that entire song from start to finish, and I could see why people wanted to learn it.
Ang Huling El Bimbo. Wow.
That's it. That's the song.
By the
Philippines band, the Eraserheads. There's a whole story about it. And it's,
interesting.
There you go. So I wanted to name check them and give them their just rewards for actually being top of that entire list. But everything else in that article holds true.
Amazing.
So Yeah. Cool, man.
It's such a good, I'm so glad you shared, because it's absolutely fascinating. I mean, it's equal parts fascinating, interesting. Those are the same thing. But you know what I mean? Equal parts fascinating and also, like, just discombobulating in a way. Like, say, that Nigeria's number one search song is Spanish Fly by Van Halen. Are you sure?
It begs more questions than it answers, this article.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, anyway. There we go, dude.
There you go.
I'm so glad you shared it. But, thank you very much.
But do your ear training, people. Seven Nation Army is within everyone's gift. To summarize, like, don't Google that.
Do your ear training.
Oh, it's good to be back, buddy. I missed you, and I've really enjoyed this chat.
Yeah,
thank
it's been wonderful, mate. Really good to see you again. Looking forward to the next one. Till then, take care. Have a cracking weekend. And I'll speak to you soon.
Speak to you soon, mate.
All the best, bud. Bye. Thanks so much for listening. If you like what you hear, then why not give the rest of our shows a good listen too? And if you love our podcast and are a regular listener who wants to support the show even more, then consider buying us a coffee over on our Buy Me a Coffee page. Anyway, see you again next time on the Guitar Smarts podcast.